Irish Illustrated Insider is sponsored by VisitSouthBend.com. Is it time to check a Notre Dame home game off your bucket list? Has it been too long since you've soaked in the game day atmosphere in person? Whether it's for the first time ever or in a while, start planning your trip to South Bend to watch the Fighting Irish with ideas and inspiration at VisitSouthBend.com.
Welcome back, everybody, from bye week number two for Notre Dame here in 2023. It's Monday, November 13th. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. We are joined today by John Bryce of Football Scoop and a member of the Irish Illustrated staff as well. We've invited JB to join us to talk a little Notre Dame football, but also to discuss the Michigan situation with Jim Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh missing the game on Saturday against Penn State, suspended for two more games unless they get an injunction, right, JB? We brought JB in because Football Scoop has been all over this. On top of this, John himself has been involved with it. And so we're going to talk about that. Before we get to that, let's talk a little Notre Dame football, though. We just came from Marcus Freeman's press conference, and there were some announcements regarding injuries. If you haven't checked out our instant analysis, we covered this as well. But Rocco Spindler will be lost for the balance of the season with a knee injury that occurred in the second half of the Clemson game. Do we know, and it's already been asked, the severity of that knee injury, guys? Is it an ACL or is it something less?
Working to confirm, it's been indicated it was a ligament, but we're working to confirm exactly which one. But the fact that mandated surgery already lets you know that Spindler's going to be out a little bit longer than just the final few weeks of this season and bowl prep.
Yeah, it's a tough break for him because, this is not two terrible games to miss here for Rocco Spindler in terms of Notre Dame's fortunes with Wake Forest and Stanford. But just his development, people want to write a guy off because he wasn't fantastic. Well, he needed a whole year to get it under his belt to become the best player he could be. And this was the first of 3 years starting in terms of Spindler's hopes for Notre Dame. So he'll have a little bit of a battle here in the offseason. And he already had a battle on his hands because Billy Schroth was only going to get better. Pat Coogan obviously got better in the last calendar year. And the emergence of Ashton Craig for me at center makes it all the more likely, and we pushed back on this a few times, that anybody else would move to center because they like Ashton Craig at center. Tim Priester, they told you that well over a year ago. And I guess the only surprise was that Andrew Kristofic briefly beat him out this year because he did get in ahead of him twice.
Yeah, I just think that, fifth-year guy, they wanted to put him out there. He had some experience. He had dabbled a little bit. I mean, Kristofic had dabbled a little bit at center, and so they went in that direction. But Ashton Craig is somebody that has been talked up to me since early last season about what he had done on the practice field. And the problem is next year they're going to have too many interior offensive linemen,
yes,
that appear to be among the best of the best on the offensive line. So
including the right tackle is an offensive lineman interior candidate that would be the best one possibly.
Yeah, probably. But because of the makeup of that room, he probably stays a tackle, whether it's right or left. We'll see about that. But, finishing up on injuries, Zeke Correll left the Clemson game with a concussion. He still is in concussion protocol. And I don't want to read too much into what Marcus Freeman said today when the media gathered with him, but it kind of sounds like if Kristofic has recovered, then he's in the running with Ashton Craig to start at center. But it kind of sounds to me like Correll will not be available this weekend. I think we've kind of come under the assumption that, oh, concussion, okay, he'll miss 1 week and then be back the next, but it isn't always so tidy and so convenient. Other injuries, Luke Telich, the impressive walk-on that's been a part of Notre Dame's coverage teams most of the season, suffered a broken collarbone in practice last week, and so he is out. And then Matt Salerno, who's been out since game, was that one or two?
He got hurt in, not game one. He got hurt in South Bend. It was two or three. I can't recall if it was TSU or Central. Yeah,
it was two. And he's been out with a broken leg since then. And Marcus Freeman sounded like Salerno would be back. Maybe not this week, but by next week, certainly. And so that comes a little bit late for what Notre Dame's been looking for at wide receiver. But good to have Matt Salerno back. Guys, anything else from today? And we talked about it on Instant Analysis, but just chime in on some of the stuff that Marcus Freeman discussed with the media today.
I wanted to chime in on this during Instant Analysis. The Matt Salerno, the possible return of Salerno. I mean, we're talking about guys that someone's missed 2.5 months. And the big thing for Matt Salerno is he's reliable and a guy that Sam Hartman can trust. He's not coming in and becoming a difference maker against Wake Forest and Stanford. Like, it could really help in the bowl game, but I don't want to overplay Salerno's return. I think people underplay the loss of Salerno, but him showing up and all of a sudden making a bunch of plays, he needed a whole season too to become a player with Sam Hartman. This is just one more guy you can trust, because it seems like when you're reading the tea leaves, Jaden Thomas just isn't right with the hamstring situation.
It's been such a lingering situation. And again, they thought he was back and then re-aggravated it very late in the process going into Clemson and just could not become a factor. The significance of Salerno is that, again, that's a very depleted wide receiver core that didn't have adequate depth to begin with. So right. Any Matt Salerno is good Matt Salerno, because it's another healthy body or healthier body for Notre Dame's pass catching group.
Yeah, and this is something I talked about during the summer, during the preseason. Salerno's value really would come out when surrounded by Notre Dame's other best receivers on the field. I felt like Hartman would develop a chemistry with Salerno, because he would be a guy that he could count on and trust to be where he needs to be and when he needs him to be in a spot to, you know, to be a release throw for him. And they just never got to that point. I agree with you, Tim. I mean, he's not going to catch 7 balls for 85 yards all of a sudden, but he was a guy that would have given some comfort zone to Sam Hartman, who pretty much has lost with the injury to Mitchell Evans. He's pretty much lost any comfort zone that he had with any of Notre Dame's pass catchers.
Yeah. And I think he's probably developing it with Jordan Faison, but let's go back to the Matt Salerno point. Look, I think Jordan Faison is better than Matt Salerno as a weapon, but Tim, you want to talk about a guy that needs more good players around him. Jordan Faison shouldn't be the number one wide receiver for Notre Dame football either, but he sure is trending that way right now. That it's the same thing as Mitchell Evans after the Ohio State game. And then after the Duke game, I was like, great for Mitchell Evans, 100% awesome for him. He's fantastic. Should he really be the only guy? That's what we're looking at now. If Jordan Faison's your only guy that you're relying on, and a little bit of Chris Tyree, of course, but we're in a situation where they just need help there. So JB's point is right. Any Matt Salerno is good Matt Salerno when you don't have a Matt Salerno.
And well, John, Marcus Freeman was not just talking about Faison. He was talking about Greathouse and Flores as well. And Greathouse has kind of got lost amidst the whole hamstring issue. Flores is still out there. He had the most snaps last week, right, Tim? Did he not?
Greathouse has had the most snaps most of the games. But yeah, Flores might have overtaken Greathouse in the last game. Yeah.
Yeah. JB, let's switch gears here and jump into what you and Football Scoop have been covering with Michigan. Michigan, of course, convincing in a low-scoring way, but a convincing victor over Penn State and Penn State this past weekend. Michigan, I don't know, man. I know they haven't played great teams. It's not their fault. I guess the non-conference schedule is.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's a little bit.
But I mean, within the Big Ten, I mean, they can't. It's not their fault that Penn State can't be a really good team.
And Michigan State stinks. And yeah, that these teams should be better than they are. You're right.
Iowa can't score, and et cetera, et cetera. But John, I'm gonna turn it over to you a little bit to talk to our listeners about the Michigan situation. We might even get to Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher being let go and the Mississippi State head coach, after less than a season, also fired.
Yeah, I think probably the most significant thing in the entire scope of the Michigan scandal is the fact that the 13-page letter the Big Ten released last week that we wrote on very extensively at Football Scoop is one of the most damning pieces of official documentation that we've ever seen on any sort of scandal of this nature, particularly when you have it revealed that the brazenness of Michigan's cheating, the widespread nature of Michigan's cheating, was so bad that the NCAA literally broke precedents and involved the Big Ten office and notified other Michigan opponents because they viewed it as so widespread and such a particular threat to the nature of true competition and sportsmanship. And so I don't think that point can be hammered home enough. This was literally so egregious in the eyes of the NCAA that they called the Big Ten Conference and looped them in and involved them in things rather than just notifying Michigan, you're under investigation for these allegations, and then took the extraordinary step of notifying then even other people to let them know that this was an issue and to let them know they needed to guard against the true nature of competition being deceived by Michigan's scheme. So Jim Harbaugh is amidst a 3-game suspension. They're fighting for an injunction or temporary restraining order against that suspension. I imagine that the Big Ten right now, which hired outside legal counsel during this process to ensure that it could impose judgment as it deemed fit, will also be poised to make a counter move against Michigan. If that is indeed the case, certainly my boss at Football Scoop thinks there's a great chance that Jim Harbaugh does not coach again at Michigan. I don't think there's very much chance whatsoever that Jim Harbaugh, in the way that we know this Michigan staff today, will be there for the 2024 season.
Yeah, the 24 season seems 100% out to me, just logically speaking. I mean, you could prove all this false, and that's not going to happen for 2024 at this point. There is no, the feeling of the emptiness of not coaching these final three games. I know it's, you want your head coach on game day, but he's still able to prepare his team.
Yeah,
for all these games, it's just it feels so much less than it could have been. I guess it's something.
Well, again, I think the important thing to note is that the Big Ten feels like it's acting as extensively as it is permitted to do so right now. This is not the only punishment that Michigan and Jim Harbaugh will receive. The NCAA still has its ability to step in, and now the NCAA moves at a pace that oftentimes make glaciers appear speedy. But again, the NCAA has broken its own precedence in this process to begin making sure Michigan absorbs some ramifications in the here and now. So will the NCAA continue to behave in a proactive manner that we have never seen before? Certainly, again, that letter, we have it linked on our website, 13 pages, official document from the Big Ten. You want to read every page of that letter because of how damning it is and how clear it lays bare the nature of Michigan's cheating. And the other thing I would point out is a line that I think we continue to hear Harbaugh making ridiculously stupid statements, such as today, claiming Michigan should be America's team for fighting through adversity. That letter pointed out Michigan didn't even deny the scheme in all of its filings with the Big Ten. Quote, they said, "You're just seeking to delay accountability on this through technicalities." When, in legalese, that's a smackdown.
And, you know, over the weekend, like I heard Desmond Howard say that the SEC would never do this to Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. John, could you speak to the significance of the Big Ten's teams, you know, involvement in the sharing of Michigan signs? And I assume that was in response to what Michigan was doing to them and the rest of the Big Ten.
Well, look, we just heard Marcus Freeman a few weeks ago as this topic was starting to fully explode into the overwhelming narrative throughout college football right now, saying we just assume our opponents have our signals stolen every week. And again, coaches are not mad about that. They're mad about what I've labeled an almost CIA level covert operation that's very expansive and very extensive for years long that Michigan has been doing with illegal in-person scouting and technologically scouting those games to gain an advantage as well. I want to make clear, I've known sign stealers through the years in the SEC. I know sign stealers, that's their Saturday roles right now on staffs around college football. Tim, you are a very accomplished baseball player. I liken it to the guy on second base trying to figure out what's coming and tipping the batter off. I know I was a very marginal baseball player and needed all the help with the curve that I could get. This is different than that. This is the best way I've heard it is from multiple coaches throughout the ACC, other coaches in the Big Ten, SEC. This isn't cheating. This is cheating the game. And I flat out had an SEC assistant coach tell me, dog, we'll cheat for a player, but we will not cheat the game. This is why you have a galvanized faction of the overwhelming majority of college football in line against Michigan, because again, this is cheating the game. This truly could be a player safety issue. This is truly it's not just counting cards. It's knowing what card is likely to come next in the deck.
Go ahead, Tim.
I hadn't thought about that as the player safety issue. Yeah, that's really an interesting point. If you keep digging deep into that, I mean, if you know it's a toss right, you can really lay somebody out on a toss right when you absolutely know it's coming. Just think of Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah reading the play, or maybe he knew it was coming against Travis Etienne. I mean, that could have been a biblical hit. And all I know is I cannot believe I'm going to be in the situation of rooting for an undefeated Ohio State team to lay waste to Michigan.
Yeah.
In a couple Saturdays from now, because usually I have to like balance out my who do I not want in the playoff feelings. They are not America's team. Maryland and Ohio State are America's teams right now. I need to not see that team in the playoff.
Yeah, I don't think America has gathered together to cheer for Michigan. I don't know
I'm saying they're gathering together to cheer for Maryland and Ohio State over these next couple
of
weeks.
I know exactly. I'm discounting what Jim Harbaugh is trying to promote, and we're talking about more and more. We're seeing firings while the season is going on. I mentioned Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M and the situation in Mississippi State. But Mike Yurcich, the offensive coordinator of Penn State, has been fired. Has he been reassigned or has he been fired, John?
No, he's been fired. And also note that a few weeks ago, among the very first to make a move was Arkansas firing Dan Enos as its offensive coordinator right after it lost the game 7-3 to Mississippi State. So the carousel is more advanced than ever before. I can remember even a couple of years ago with Football Scoop flying home from visiting my godkids on Thanksgiving Sunday and sitting in the airport because a bunch of hirings and firings were starting to really unfold that day. Now here we are. 2 weeks in front of it, a coach coming off a 51-10 win in Jimbo Fisher being fired because A&M felt it was time and didn't want to risk having emotions change if Texas A&M somehow found a way to go 8-4. Zach Arnett taking over under tragic circumstances, but that athletics administration recognizing is just a really bad fit. Wasn't the AD that promoted him. And also he has a super cheap buyout in terms of the world of college football of less than $5 million with offset figures included, with mitigation included, and a story we were able to break this morning on Football Scoop.
Meanwhile, Texas A&M owes Jimbo Fisher a tidy $76.8 million. It's good he got that .8 because that extra $800,000 is going to come in handy, I would think.
They'll pay a lot of – well, that won't pay very many taxes. That might pay his accountant, however.
That's just amazing. By the way, Dan Enos, I had a calendar picture as a teenager of Chris Zorich throwing him to the ground in my room. That's the last time I really heavily considered him.
That's not the first time Enos has been fired, right? What was that?
It is not the first time he's been fired. He was fired once before from Arkansas, and Pittman really put himself in a bind with this hire. And then Enos is the guy that had a topsy-turvy run at Alabama, then was with Miami, Maryland, a number of places. So, he's been bad news for some coaches through the years.
Is Mike Elko at the top of A&M's list?
Mike Elko is very high on the list and has a very reasonable buyout. Again, as we talk about the absurdity of these figures, Mike Elko can buy out and leave his Duke contract for approximately $5 million, whereas a guy like Dan Lanning, whom I believe also is on Texas A&M's list, has a prodigious $20 million buyout to leave Oregon. I would also note very strongly Jeff Traylor, the UTSA coach. He has a $7 million buyout. He has super deep Texas ties from the high school ranks on. He's been extraordinarily successful at UTSA. He's got, again, great respect from the high school coaches throughout the Lone Star State. We know how crazy that state is about its high school football. He's very much in it. And then had James Franklin won on Saturday, I believe he would have been a very strong contender. And then Lane Kiffin also certainly lurking there in what could be unfolding at Texas A&M.
I had my guess. If I had my pick there, I would send James Franklin to Texas A&M for the opener next week against Notre Dame.
Next year.
Next year against Notre Dame. And it would not be Mike Elko. Would not be the guy I would send over there if given the choice. I want to heretofore refer to James Franklin as the Vanderbilt miracle, because if you told me that's the same guy that led Vanderbilt to 9 wins in the SEC, I don't know what happened since then.
Well, yeah, he is very solid, but he has made some really bad offensive coordinator hires. He's had a string of them. They've worked through some offensive coordinators from Kirk Siakoroka to Mike Yurkic now. And here's a couple of times that Yurkic has also failed to meet expectations. You know, nobody at Columbus was sad to see him go from Ohio State a couple of years ago when he left for Penn State. And a lot of people wondered how much of the credit at Oklahoma State was Mike Gundy versus Mike Yurkic. And as time passes, it looks a lot more and more like Mike Gundy than it does Mike Yurkic.
You've heard us talk about Home Field Apparel since the start of the season. There are a lot of collegiate apparel brands out there, but we wanted to partner with Home Field because their designs are the best out there. Some of Irish Illustrated's favorites are the Sam Hartman Victory March Tee, the Script Tee, and the Retro Long Sleeve. Be sure to go to homefieldapparel.com, filter by Notre Dame, and see what we're talking about. There's also currently an exclusive football bundle, which includes a baseball tee, sweats, a hoodie, and more. It's the perfect gift for a fellow Irish fan or a perfect gift to treat yourself for being a loyal Notre Dame fan. And our listeners get an exclusive deal using code Irish Illustrated. Irish Illustrated gets you 15% off your first order. We know you're all wearing Notre Dame gear, so if you're in need of a refresh, we really think you should check out Home Field Apparel. Their designs are super unique, and a lot of thought goes into each concept. There's really nothing else on the market like what Home Field is doing. You can find them at homefieldapparel.com. And again, use code Irish Illustrated for 15% off your first order. Segment 2 coming up, burning up the boards.
If you're coming to a game this season, you have to check out Game Day Your Way, the official tailgate service provider of Notre Dame. Game Day Your Way offers everything you need, including tailgate gear, catering, and even beverage delivery right to your spot. And their Irish Express transportation from Chicago allows you to tailgate while you travel to their all-inclusive party zone in South Bend. Let Game Day deal with all the hassle so you can focus on the fun. For tailgates, tickets, transportation, and more, visit GameDayYourWay.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Some things are just made for each other, like tailgates and touchdowns. We're adding one more pair to the list: Aer Lingus and college football. Join us in Dublin this August for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Too soon? Plan your winter or spring break now with non-stop flights from cities including Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles, and New York. Fly in comfort to Dublin, our European hub. Go coast to coast and discover the sights of Ireland or explore any of the 50-plus European cities we connect to, including Amsterdam, London, Paris, and Rome. Visit aerlingus.com to book today.
Welcome back to segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Play Like a Champ 7. It's August 26, 2024. Irish Illustrated podcast previews Marcus Freeman of the Fighting Irish heading to College Station to take on Texas A&M and new head coach blank.
Yeah, that's a great question. That will be one of the preeminent openings in this college coaching carousel. There still will be a couple more Power 5 jobs that come open and some trickle-down effects, but Texas A&M is on the surface a very good job. When you examine it a little deeper, though, they've only had one season of double-digit wins since 1998, guys. One season of 10 or more wins in 25 years. They have not won a conference championship since 1998. Who will it be? I would say Jeff Traylor is a strong, strong candidate. Mike Elko certainly in that mix. Lane Kiffin in that mix. And then a dark horse candidate that I find very intriguing is former A&M star Aaron Glenn, who's the defensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions. I'm very intrigued by his coaching ascension. But I think it will most likely come from one of those four guys. There could always be a dark horse candidate. But Jeff Traylor has a lot of traction already. And I frankly expect Jeff Traylor to be coveted by Houston whenever it makes a move, which is coming sooner rather than later, on Dana Holgorsen.
Before I kick it to you, Priester, I do wonder why John did not include names I was looking for, like Clay Helton, for that opening game with Notre Dame, and just maybe see if it's the right call. Just take a shot and work, hire somebody and see if he could beat Notre Dame.
I was going to say R.C. Slocum. Yeah. who was a great coach for Texas. Really, really a quality coach. That when Notre Dame played A&M in back-to-back years of bowl games, man, there was a ton of talent on the field both sides, and Notre Dame ended up whipping them in one of those games, but we had the 24-21 Kevin Pendergast game-winning field goal to win one of those games, and he was a great coach, and they've not been able to find their R.C. Slocum since those days. Question from RyeGuy0917. Do you believe Marcus Freeman already knows if he's moving on or not from Jared Parker as offensive coordinator? If so, would there be any major benefits of doing it before the end of the regular season as opposed to waiting until after the season? What's your perspective on that, John?
I don't think Marcus Freeman has made up his mind in that regard yet whatsoever. I think that there have been a number of befuddling things about this season for Notre Dame in a variety of areas, but most glaringly on the offensive side of the ball. I think it's been a much more difficult transition than perhaps many expected for Sam Hartman, going from that tempo rhythm Wake Forest offense to a far more traditional pro style, at times overly plotting Notre Dame offense. But I don't think that there's anything sealed about Jared Parker at this point. And I do believe that when Jared Parker ascended to the offensive coordinator role in February of this year, that he earned a 3-year deal at that time. And I know that it's a 7-figure deal. So there is some significance to that component as well. But I would point out, as people ask questions about Gino Gadulli's involvement and other things, I'm quite confident in saying there is great dialogue among this offensive staff, and particularly on Dylan, Chancey, Gino. Those guys meet every Sunday and formulate the game plan together. This is not any sort of dictatorship. This is very much, what do you like? Why do you like it? Let's talk about it. You believe in it. Stand on the table. Let's put it in the game plan. If it's in the game plan, let's find a way to use it. There are perhaps some more RPO options in the game plan than what I'd realized as I talked to some folks over this most recent bye week. That's a long-winded way, I guess, of saying I don't at all think Marcus Freeman has made up his mind.
I don't think he's made up his mind either, with less knowledge here than JB. I want to use some logic, though. When you hired Jared Parker, you had to know there would be weaknesses in hiring a first-time offensive coordinator. Some of those have maybe been heightened more than you would have guessed, perhaps, with the inability to find some answers against the better defenses. I think for those logically asking this question, it can be asked for me because of, and this I don't ever like to talk about One Football Saturday because it doesn't mean anything, but the Clemson game on the heels of Louisville and other games and Duke, where the offense did not click. Duke and Louisville, they struggled a lot on offense and won and lost the game. So on the heels of that, but you're playing great football again as a team in the complimentary football fashion we're all talking about. You're coming off really your best moments as a football team there with the Pittsburgh win, the bye week, USC. To have a fallback like that is the first time I looked down and thought, what is fundamentally wrong here? Other than execution is obviously a big problem. And when I say execution, people are going to say, oh, you're blaming the players. I am blaming the coach and the players, because the coaches are supposed to allow the players to execute by knowing what they do best in week 10. That would be my major complaint with Parker and the whole offense. You should absolutely know what your guys can do best by week 10. Whereas when in week 3, when you didn't, he adjusted beautifully against North Carolina State when he didn't know what his team did best.
Tim, I totally agree with you. Execution is the responsibility of the coordinator.
There's some players that were terrible on tape against Clemson, just horrible against Clemson.
And I would contend, I'm not going into blame or bash players, but look, in the age of NIL, when players are making a lot of money, there's a bit more scrutiny that they're opened up to, in my opinion, than when the game was perceived as being truly played by amateurs and coached by professionals. I think that's an element of it. I think it's impossible to ignore the fact that the Sam Hartman basically played almost turnover-free football and didn't throw a pick through 6 games. Since then, has thrown 7 interceptions in around his last 113 pass attempts. He's locked onto receivers and then not thrown the ball. He's missed some throws. Execution is top down for sure, and they've all got to be better. One more thing that I believe in this whole evaluation of Jared Parker that's an underlying theme, but that is an undeniable theme, is that Notre Dame in a lot of ways botched the offensive coordinator search when it couldn't nail down Andy Ludwig nor Colin Klein. By the time Jared Parker got it, he was fighting a perception battle that did not lend itself to give him any benefit of the doubt going into this season.
Yeah, I grow weary of the blame game at this time of year, and I don't like the pitting of Notre Dame versus Notre Dame, that the defense is great and the offense is bad, and blame them. And like we in the industry are constantly getting tortured for the message that we give, you know, kill the messenger kind of thing. And it's, how many times have we talked about this game is not, it's not, it's 11 on 11. It can't be one thing. I mean, it is Sam Hartman. It is the offensive coordinator. It is the wide receivers. It is the offensive line when you're not protecting Sam Hartman at Clemson. It's always going to be a combination of these things. And the blame game really gets very old, or we will be accused of not blaming one side enough and blaming too much of the other, or vice versa.
It is the tight ends that everybody wanted to play ahead of Mitchell Evans because he was missing the Central Michigan game and hadn't done anything yet, and then became Notre Dame's best football player on offense. Think about that. I had a comment. Somebody came up to me in our press box and told me Mitchell Evans sitting out is going to get Wally pipped in the Central Michigan game. A colleague. He's going to get Wally pipped. He's the best player on Notre Dame's offense. Second best player on Notre Dame's offense by a wide margin.
And he's an NFL talent. He's proved himself. He will absolutely have a chance to play in the NFL. And his football IQ, I think, as much as they miss his physical skills right now, Mitchell Evans' football IQ is desperately missed, in my opinion, right now. Desperately.
Which is why he played right from the very beginning. And then that's not even talking about his role in the run fit, the blocking aspect of the running game. I mean, I think, you know, if you didn't, I'm not saying that he's Michael Mayer, but if you put a different number on him when he was playing his best football, there really wasn't a whole lot of difference, was there? He made all the catches. He's longer. He's faster. He's a hell of a football player and a huge miss. But the constant, we're not blaming one side enough over the other. We're always going to point to a combination of things, because that's the game of football. That's how it's played.
I want to throw one thing in, because this is really my overlying point when people just want to fire coaches and coordinators. It's very easy for fans to want to fire a coordinator because they figure all these guys we have on the team must be good, so it's the coordinator's fault. Notre Dame could have a better offensive coordinator than Jared Parker. That is true. They could find a better offensive coordinator. They could have had a better offensive coordinator. There's a better offensive coordinator in the world somewhere than Jared Parker, the first-year coordinator. But just bringing in a coordinator is not going to make these tight ends play better and this quarterback play better and these wide receivers play better to the point where you're going to be happy about it.
And if I could just leave it with this one last point for the rush. And again, the evaluation is still ongoing. I think we all want and need to see more from Jared Parker in this offense these last two games of the season, last three games of the season. But let me point out an undeniable fact, especially as Marcus Freeman acknowledged today, that Notre Dame will go back into the transfer portal and seek a quarterback via that route. Presumably, Notre Dame would like to get a quarterback that could come in and start right away next year. Certainly will compete for the job. Regardless, Notre Dame will have a brand new starting quarterback next year. I'm not convinced that a brand new starting quarterback with a third different offensive coordinator in each of Marcus Freeman's 3 years of head coaching is the best avenue for Notre Dame. Moreover, you're looking at what is going to be the fourth different starting quarterback for all 4 years that Marcus Freeman has been at Notre Dame. When you dial it back to the fact that Jack Cohn was the starter in 21 and Marcus Freeman's season as defensive coordinator. So I'm not making excuses for anybody. I am saying there's merit to continuity. There needs to be some semblance of continuity, whatever form or shape that takes. And you look at the NFL, they do not look – And they have free agency and they can hire and fire and do all this stuff. Franchises want stability at some key positions, and there's not stability right now at Notre Dame, especially if you go into a third season with a third different offensive coordinator and guaranteed to have a third different starting quarterback.
I'm going to throw out this question now, and I think we've addressed it, and it's easy to overlook, but it's a question from Star Shooter. Is there any chance Jared Parker just handling tight end coaching again and hiring another OC? Tim, explain why that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem because you can have so many coaches. That would mean that another offensive coach would have to move on for Notre Dame for that to happen. I mean, obviously, or they could hire Gino Gaduli or Deal McCullough as their offensive coordinator, but I don't think that's not the direction they're going to go. So if Parker is just the tight ends coach, that would mean someone like McCullough would get an NFL deal that he couldn't turn down. I mean, we know Dylan McCullough likes the NFL. If he were to get a great NFL job, he would go for that. That's right, fine.
But then your OC would have to be the running backs coach.
Then your OC would have to be running backs coach. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, I'm sure Jared Parker could coach running backs as well, but I'm saying your OC would have to be, it's hard to finagle it. It's hard to finagle this just by saying, well, he's done a good job with Mitchell Evans. Let's hang on and then go that route, because you at least have to, and I keep saying McCullough because he's just the most likely to, if he gets a great NFL offer, I think he would take it.
Yeah.
Or I would not, absolutely would not discount Dylan McCullough as a head coaching candidate, particularly in the MAC. And people indicate to us at Football Scoop there will definitely be multiple MAC openings that are expected coming up in this cycle.
Yeah, it's funny how we, you know, when the defense really started to take off this year, you start saying, well, L. Golden's second year, how important it is to have that continuity. But you don't hear too many people defending Jared Parker about, other than JB here pointing it out. I mean, and there's truth to it. You know, the notion of continuity as people look at Jared Parker isn't very appealing. And yet, you know, I mean, Sam Hartman is still 26th in the country in pass efficiency, and Notre Dame's scoring offense is still up there. But of course, they did a lot of that against inferior competition. I did a story, you know, I mean, fairly recently that what they've done offensively against the better defenses is not good enough. It doesn't matter if a team is holding, you know, opponents to 16 points a game. You can't score 14 or 17 or 20 or 23. It's not enough. You got to be better than that if you're the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame.
And I think, honestly, in fairness to fans, like the ones that didn't believe us where we said they need Al, that we were going on in January, they need Al Golden to come back for a second year. You can't have a fourth coordinator and a fourth linebacker coach for these linebackers in their next year. It was an easier sell for some fans to listen to because Golden had one bad game last year. I mean, if you couldn't get past the one game where he didn't coach a great game, then, I mean, that's your fault as a fan. You're never going to be happy. So that was an easier sell than it would be for Parker now, because even if Notre Dame goes out and kills Wake Forest and Stanford, unless it's LSU in the bowl game, it's going to be hard to sell compared to Al Golden, I think. If you're just looking at the fan base, that I understand why it would be a hard sell.
Well, and again, I'll just reiterate that Parker was done no favors because of how the search unfolded.
Totally agree. He was up against it right from the very beginning. It would have taken a perfect season. He was off to a good start. I mean, I think that people were open-minded, but all it took was one game, and that was Ohio State game that O'Malley and I thought was.
I still think they were fine. Yeah,
and done well. We're not going to change our minds on that, nor are people that were against it going to change their minds on that either. But it was all part of the tone of the game, the direction of the game, and it would have worked out well had the defense made a play down the stretch or had the right amount of people on the field, et cetera.
In terms of looking at antiquated stats, Tim, let's remember not to do it anymore because Notre Dame has the 16th ranked scoring offense. And do you know who number 15 is directly in front of them? The Penn State Nittany Lions, who have the worst offense I've ever seen in my entire life.
Okay, there we go. That's
have you not watched Iowa this year, Tim?
Oh, no, I don't watch Iowa. I make it a rule not to do those things. So I watched Penn State twice. And at the worst, I'm just going to say they're the worst offense I've ever seen. And I've only watched them play twice. There you go. And it was the two big games. They stink. Well,
you're sparing your retinas by not watching Iowa.
We got a couple questions here back to back. One from Denver Maximus. What type of game do you expect from Sam Hartman to have against Wake Forest? And then from Kaiser Wilhelm, Sam Hartman has had a bad pattern this year of underperforming against teams he lost to while at Wake Forest. How worried should we be about the psychological factor of him playing against longtime friends and teammates? I don't know that that held up against everybody, right? NC State?
Not NC State, yeah.
Yeah. He hadn't played well against NC State, and they scored 45.
Well, he had played incredible against Clemson. He scored six touchdown passes the last time. There's got to be a psychological factor for Hartman playing against Wake. There always was going to be, and I think there would have been if he was a Heisman candidate. This is a tough, it's a weird game for him. I actually asked Marcus Freeman that, and probably didn't ask it correctly because I asked about how Sam Hartman can help them with the scouting, of course, of Wake Forest offense, but also it's a unique week for Hartman. It's a strange thing for the way Hartman's playing now. I could see him pressing in this game if he doesn't get off to a good start, but these are also much more elite athletes, Sam Hartman experience compared to what he's not an 18-year-old college kid that's playing against his dad or something like that. I mean, he should be able to handle this. And I get it, but come on.
Yeah. And look, this is a guy that was voted a Notre Dame team captain in the preseason. You have to believe that his teammates very much want this game and want him to shine in this game as well.
And Wake's not that good. That's a very big thing for this.
I was just going to talk about the Wake Forest defense, and little things. I would imagine they know how they want to execute their pass rush against Sam Hartman. Based upon tendencies and escape routes and things like that. They do have a couple people. Jasheen Davis, number 30, their defensive end, puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback. They have a linebacker by the name of Jacob Roberts, puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback. They're not very big, though. They're not big up front on defense. And with the loss of Donovan Green at wide receiver in the preseason, I know I'm switching away from Sam Hartman going against the defense, but other than Jamal Banks, it's a pretty small receiving core as well. But I think this is a game Notre Dame can run the football against Wake Forest, and that should make things a little bit easier for Sam Hartman, but I don't know. I kind of feel like playing Wake Forest will impact him a little bit. I don't think that we've talked about this. He doesn't have full faith in the wide receivers. He'd probably feel better if he was throwing to the Wake Forest wideouts, maybe from last year, because they had A.T. Perry there as well. But
as long as he doesn't say that this week, I think we're cool.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I don't think he will.
Next question is from ND1012. Will Notre Dame consider undergraduate wide receivers in the portal based on the performance of their wide receivers this season?
Yeah, look, let's be clear. Yes, I think that's the case. But I also think you have to look at sort of Notre Dame's limitations within that. My understanding is Notre Dame can either take graduate transfers via the portal, or it can take guys that are just in their first year and can still basically enroll as freshmen or first-year players. So they can look at that for sure, but they're guys that would have to get into Notre Dame under standard auspices.
Yeah, yep. That's difficult. I mean, Notre Dame has not overcome that hurdle yet, and it's still, just like you say, JB, I mean, a young guy, a freshman, or a graduate assistant or a graduate student, and you know, I think you're also, I mean, I feel like they're also trending toward feeling good about the wideouts they're recruiting. Micah Gilbert's had a sensational senior year. Cam Williams is rated higher than him, but I think Notre Dame feels great about Gilbert. Saldati has had a tremendous senior season as well. And then you couple them with the freshmen that they have, the three that we are talking about in terms of of Great House and Flores and Faison. I don't know where Braylon James will fit in, but we're mentioning a bunch of names here with most of the receivers still coming back and maybe Chris Tyree as well. I don't know how deep they would want to go into, you know, the transfer portal, but at least one.
I mean, and, I think at least two.
At least one and probably two, what I was going to say.
Yeah, and sorry for speaking over either of you gentlemen. Let's not forget, they did go to the portal for a receiver last year, and Caleb Smith never made it to summer camp or anything. So it's not like Notre Dame ignored that a year ago. It went out and found a guy that they thought would be a good fit and fit what they could do to get people via the portal at that position, and it just did not work out.
With the three freshmen coming in, and the reality that Notre Dame now has five freshmen on their current team because of Faison and KK Smith, you can have, if Tyree comes back, 12 wide receivers without the portal. There is no way Notre Dame doesn't have transfers out of its wide receiver room this offseason. No chance. They will every year for the rest of our lives, and they usually do every year without the portal. It's a high transfer position.
And there's a lot of excitement about the ongoing development of KK. He has been somebody that they really are continuing to see more and more out of and believe he can have a really strong future for this program.
I have a question for you guys. If I said Notre Dame is going to next year with their freshman from this year and their freshman from next year, plus Jaden Thomas is their main, that's their wide receiver core. Tobias Merriweather can be on the team all you want. I mean, that's what you think, it's a strong core?
Well,
then they have to get a transfer.
At least one and probably two.
What? No, I agree. I'm pointing out they absolutely have to do this. It's not like when I'm, you know, you can't rely on these young guys to be so good.
But my point is, I think that they're building in that direction. Right. But yeah, they need to bring help in. You know, Caleb Smith, the older of the two, would have given them stability at boundary receiver, would have given you some more options with Jaden Thomas. Of course, the injury has precluded from him really doing anything this year, which is a huge blow. Sam Hartman doesn't have a lot of faith and confidence in chemistry with the wideouts, but he would have with Jaden Thomas. I feel pretty strongly about that. And he was the leader of the wideout core, and that would have maybe stabilized a few things. But no, whatever it takes, if it takes three, then go get three. It's just that, like you say, Tim, there's going to have to be a little bit of attrition then if you're going to go deeper into the transfer portal.
Next question from JP Wirt 70. Do you think the Irish are in good shape on the offensive line for 2024, or will they try to find a couple of veterans in the portal there?
JP,
this is hard.
Yeah, JP. I mean, because I certainly wouldn't be against adding an established tackle.
right. Yeah. I mean, you got to probably work with your guards and center at this situation. Yeah. What you have in Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah, Notre Dame went into this season very much believing it was likely to lose both of its starting tackles. And the way the season has unfolded, I think there's a belief that won't be the case now. I know they're very encouraged by the younger guys coming up. We've talked about Ashton Craig, Billy Shrouth. There's extreme optimism about Charles Jagasa, Sam Pendleton. So, yeah, you want experience, especially, again, because you're going to have a brand new starting quarterback next year. So you have to look at your roster. You have to see what you can feasibly get from the transfer portal. I had a Big Ten coach and an ACC coach tell me here recently that they were looking at a defensive lineman who had gone into the portal, and the defensive lineman told both these coaches the same thing. Coach, I'm looking to be developed, and I'm looking to get paid. Here's what this school is offering me in terms of pay. Where are you at in terms of pay? That's the reality right now. And that is not a marketplace that Notre Dame has particularly been wading itself into. So, again, there are extenuating circumstances. But when you go into what's going to be a pivotal year in this Notre Dame football program, if you can add experience at any of these key positions via the portal, you have to do so. You also have to figure out how many of those 31 players that Marcus Freeman said will participate in senior day this weekend, how many of those guys are truly playing their final game or their final home game.
Tim, the difference for me is, if you were to say to me, when we're talking about offensive linemen, if you were to say Notre Dame's needs wide receivers in the portal, and they are looking at three guys from FCS that were extremely productive for their teams. This guy scored 14 touchdowns. This different guy had 80 catches. A different guy had 21 yards a catch. I'd be like, awesome. Get him in here. Let's see if they can do it. If you said Notre Dame's looking at a group of five starting tackle to come in and try to compete to be the new left tackle at Notre Dame, I'd be very concerned with that situation. No,
I agree. I think the positions require a different approach to it. Totally agree. I'm talking about an established power five offensive tackle. Yeah, I'm not. And you do. And I think that's a great point that you bring up. You do look at it differently, like with skill position guys. Look, if you can run and you've proven you can catch the football, I mean, the translation, and you're smart enough to handle, you know, coverages and stuff like that, then go for it. Absolutely. We have a long question here from Irish John M. Bear with me. The question is it possible that Notre Dame's offensive struggles against the better defenses on their schedule and in five of the past six games can be laid solely at the feet of the offensive line, that their poor play has caused Hartman's accuracy issues, the wide receivers to struggle to get open and catch passes, plus are tied to the inability to score points and convert on third down? Is it possible that the lack of offensive productivity is not mainly due to Parker's play calling or lack of execution by the skill players?
I would have to remove the word solely right away. Solely, completely. There's never solely involved here. I think the offensive line has an odd pass from the fan base this year, because I do believe they are not better against the best teams they've played. And that's all that merely matters. They did not protect Hartman against Louisville. They did not win the battle against Clemson. But when you watch that Clemson film, there was some stuff there for Notre Dame that was more on Sam Hartman than it was on the offensive line or anything come close to play calling. So I think it's everything. If you were to give a pass to any group this year, aside from pass protection against Clemson, in which the running backs really colossally struggled against Jeremiah Trotter, Priester's guy, I think the running backs have performed well this season. And I actually am the only guy in the world that wasn't mad when they were taking Estime out to give Price and Love some series, even though Estime was playing well. I just think those guys are all three are good. And I think that's how you should use them. And it didn't work out. And as Freeman points out, if you're going to have a bunch of three and outs, you're not getting anything done. Your rotation looks a lot worse when you have a three and out. I did not have a problem there. I think every other position is heavily involved other than running back.
I think if we're going to talk and we asked Marcus Freeman this question today about complimentary football and how good it's been and some of Notre Dame's biggest wins, noteworthy USC and Pittsburgh, where Notre Dame just seized control really by feeding off of all three phases. I think when you look at the offensive breakdowns, it's complementary within that. You can't pinpoint a single thing, because every element of the offense has had breakdowns that have contributed to failure, from the quarterback to the O-line, to the coordinator, to the receivers, to the running backs, although the running backs more infrequently than any other group, to your point.
Yeah, there's no running back rotation when you're going three and out.
I think people are just, it's a fun thing to complain about because Estime started great. But trust me, if Estime ran to the line and got stuffed three more times than he did, you'd say, well, where the hell is Jadarian Price? Why isn't Jeremiah Love playing? That's a hard one. I don't have a problem with their usage there.
I totally agree. And it was fluctuating back and forth between public sentiment through the first half of the year about stuff like that. Then when Estime's not playing, well, why is Estime not in? When Estime's only getting 3 yards, why don't you give the ball to the home run hitter? Why don't you move Love to wide receiver? You know, these are real human beings. You can't just keep throwing something new at them all the time and expect them to play and execute to a high level. It is that complex of a game that you have to give a player a chance to gain some stability as to what you're teaching him and what position he's playing.
And I have no problem with Estime's performance. I'm just saying that other guys are good too. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. I was just going to say, that sounds an awful lot like consistency to me, Tim.
Right. And execution. Yes, exactly.
And in an approach.
A question from Mr. Joe Seiler. Who is the most likely / realistic starter at center in 2024? Is it Ashton Craig? Is it Pat Coogan? Someone else? I thought Craig held his own when he had to come in against Clemson, but I think Coogan has trained there too. We've kind of walked on this question already.
It's not someone else, though. We could say it's probably Ashton Craig or Pat Coogan going back. Yeah.
Yeah. I think probably Ashton Craig. I think that's the belief. He performed very admirably when thrust into a difficult situation at Clemson. I think might have been among Notre Dame's highest graded offensive linemen in that game against Clemson. I think there's extreme optimism about the future with Ashton Craig. And there's obviously Pat Coogan has proved he's got a spot along that offensive line as well.
What do you do? Then you have Shrouth and Spindler. You've got four potential starting guys for three spots. Does one of them can you
battle
move
it out?
Does Spindler become a swing guy? Does Shrouth? You're right. They battle it out. I don't think anybody on that offensive line exits this season with a guaranteed starting job next year, with the exception of Blake Fisher would be a starter. But again, there's going to be competition, and nobody along that interior is going to be shielded from competition. And I think you want competition, because you, especially as your coach says, he wants to be offensive and defensive line driven.
It's not ideal, but if you want your five best on the field and Billy Shrouth is at fifth, do you try to fit him at tackle? I don't know
with Wagner and Baker. I mean, is Baker back? Is Baker good? Is Baker quick enough to play left tackle all year?
And as JB mentioned, Jagasaw, a guy that they would like to. They're actually entering into a pretty good situation in terms of offensive linemen that they like. It's just a matter of finding.
Except for Joe Alt. I'd prefer loving four and liking one as opposed to liking nine. It would just be could be great to love four of them.
Yeah, and I think Coogan's shown enough that you keep him at guard. Craig's a natural center there. Mm-hmm. And we've heard a really not just last year, but we've heard some really positive feedback on him. And again, and Marcus Freeman pointed out that he thought he played well against Clemson. Now by that point it was mostly pass pro, but you know, I mean, that's a good starting point for him, but he's going to be a good football player. Loved his high school film. Thought he had a good future here at Notre Dame, and it appears to be heading in that direction, but I would imagine that he will be the guy that's the starting center next year. We're going to wrap up with a question from Bob4ND3. Does Sam Hartman play in the bowl game, and when does Marcus Freeman find out if Steve Angeli or Kenny Minchie can really lead this team next year?
I say yes. And second part answer is March and April. When they are battling a more experienced veteran quarterback that's come in from the portal, it is likely to start.
I think bowl prep really jumpstarts things for those guys. I think it's an incredible time, but it's not anything that's going to be decided in the next 6 weeks or the remainder of this calendar year or anything like that.
Well, I'm wondering if the question is being asked so that, you know, one or two or whatever play in the next couple games. Again, that's just not what coaches do. Notre Dame has a chance to win 10 games in Marcus Freeman's second year. You're not just going to just roll the dice, and if you lose, you lose. But Angeli got playing time. That doesn't mean he's going to be ready to be a starter next year if he has success against Wake Forest or Stanford. I know that's the start of the process, but it's just not the way college football programs handle this. Sam Hartman needs to play in the bowl game for the benefit of his NFL career, does he not?
Yeah, but I also feel like this needs to be said. Tim, I completely agree with you. That's not going to happen. That's not what coaches do. But if Steve Angeli or Kenny Minchie was great and Sam Hartman threw three picks in the first half against Wake Forest, they would come in the game. I think the bottom line is the coaches don't think they're anywhere near as good as Sam Hartman.
Best case scenario in all of this discussion to me is Notre Dame explodes early and gets to get those guys significant playing time again, much as they did against Pittsburgh, and not only gets them into the game to do some handoffs, but gets them into the game and lets them execute the offense. That's the key. It's not just getting into the game and mop-up duty. They have to be put into game situations to execute the offense, but you don't sacrifice your opportunity to win and to salvage this season and the message that it would send to the rest of your team if you thought you were basically experimenting with guys.
I think
at the positions.
I think the Stanford defense is more likely to be the one that Notre Dame hits early and pulls away, and then you have some opportunities with your younger quarterbacks. I just sense that Wake Forest, and they're not very good. I mean, they're struggling. Dave Clawson has fallen on the sword multiple times as to his responsibility, especially last week against NC State, where they didn't compete to win at all. They didn't score till midway through the fourth quarter. They were down 21-0 at halftime. But I think defensively, Wake Forest will find a way to hang in there, maybe partially because they know a little bit about Sam Hartman. I think the opportunities for the younger quarterbacks would more likely come at Stanford.
Do you guys think Hartman will play in the bowl game like I do?
I do.
They win their next two games, so it's a decent.
Yeah, I think game. I think it's in. It's all about impressing the NFL at that point, and he has a lot of impressing he still needs to do. I'm not sure how impressive it would be if he tore apart the LSU defense, because their defense has struggled mightily. But no, I think
I would be impressed if he tears apart the LSU defense, because that would make the business aspect of my job for the next 9 months tolerable instead of absolute hell for 270 straight days.
Look, Hartman in this pro style system that has been so foreign to him needs all the experience and repetition that he can get. I would expect him to be advised to play the bowl game, and I would expect him to be hopeful that he can get the Senior Bowl invite as well.
I don't know exactly who's going to be. Do we already know who's going to be at Senior Bowl?
They're still rolling some of those out. They're not done.
Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting to see. When we come back on Thursday for our Irish Illustrated Insider on Thursday, November 16th, we'll get more into Wake Forest. I know we'll have more questions along the lines of coordinators, who's coming and who's going and who's at fault. I know we're going to get plenty of who's at fault, but I do think that it's a pretty good matchup for Notre Dame coming up this week, and it would be victory number 8 on the season, which would keep that 10 victory season alive heading into Stanford and then the bowl game. JB, thanks for joining us today. You will be hearing more of John Bryce on Irish Illustrated Insider. Tim O'Malley, thank you. And until the next time, Thursday, November 16th, when we preview Wake Forest, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.